Ladies and gents, you're listening to Share the Candy. We're back again. Today's guest is brought to us by RadioGuestList.com. He is Al the Comedian. We're going to kick it off. Here we go. Going by one name only, Al is a 7-year veteran of stand-up comedy currently based in Honolulu, Hawaii. Born and raised in Honolulu, Al has performed extensively in Hawaii as well as on the West Coast. He has performed in shows at Sharky's Comedy Club, Laugh Track Theater, Pipeline Cafe, Hawaiian Brian's, and The Venue in Honolulu, and has done stand-up at Main Stage and Giggles Comedy Club in Seattle, as well as Brainwash and Castagnola's Wharf Room Comedy Show in San Francisco. Al has appeared on the TV talent show Entertain Me, shown on Fox 2 in Honolulu, and was on Pirate Cat Radio in San Francisco. Currently, Al serves as a regular guest on the cable access comedy talk show Loco Laugh, seen on Channel 52 throughout the state of Hawaii. He's also the subject and producer of the documentary Just Another Comic, now on Vimeo and YouTube. You can contact Al at alcomedian at facebook.com, alcomedian at myspace, and twitter.com/alcomedian. Our guest on Share the Candy today is Al the Comedian. Hello, Al.
Hi, how are you?
Good, man. How you doing?
Perfect lead-in, yes.
I have a question just to start off as I was reading that, and I read
I'm
it
sure
before.
You have many, but what is your question?
You've been in the West Coast. What's up with not hitting up Portland, man?
That's a good point. I haven't had the chance to get to Portland. I first performed on the West Coast in 2008.
Right.
And I don't want to go into all the details, but I was living in L.A., and then I was going to go up to Seattle. I had lived in Seattle in 96 previously, so I was going to move there again. And I got offered a job back here in Hawaii unexpectedly, and that was going to only take me here because I'm born and raised in Hawaii. I'm from Hawaii originally. So I got offered a job in Hawaii. Wasn't looking to go back. I had moved to L.A., but it was a job that would be lasting 5-6 months. When I'm not a stand-up, I work as a writer and journalist.
Right.
I'm a freelance journalist, freelance writer as well. So I decided, okay, reluctantly, I'm going to go back to Hawaii and finish this up, and then I'm going to head back to the mainland. So I headed back, and I decided to book some gigs and perform. So I was performing in Seattle, performing in San Francisco, on my way to L.A. to fly out. And I went past Portland, but I didn't have any business in Portland.
Right.
So that was basically the reason why I haven't hit Portland. I'd love to do Portland if they're interested in having me. Contact me at alcomedian at Facebook or alcomedian at MySpace, primarily alcomedian at Facebook. And maybe we'll work something up. I was in San Francisco last year. I did Castagnola's at Fisherman's Wharf. So I performed at Fisherman's Wharf, which is one of the largest tourist attractions in the United States. And I'd love to do more performing on the West Coast. I consider the West Coast actually my hub.
Right.
Sort of my turf, kind of like a salesman. Like, yeah, my territory is, you know, like Oregon or whatever. But I'd love to do Portland. If any comedy club's interested in having me, I'd love to come there and do some stand-up. Again, contact me at alcomedian at Facebook.
Right on, man.
I haven't plugged enough.
Right. Well, yeah. I've talked to two other comedians in the area. They've said that Portland's comedy has grown, like the scene, I guess, if you want to call it that, has grown quite a bit just in the past probably 2 to 3 years. So yeah, it should be definitely something you should check out, man, because it's starting to get.
It's funny. I've been doing this 7 years, and I've had a couple people who came to open mics that I either emceed or performed at, and they encouraged me to perform in Portland.
Right.
So you're like the third or fourth person over the years who's invited me to or urged me to do Portland.
Right.
I'd love to do it. At this point, I probably would have to be invited or what have you because of what I'm doing here in Hawaii. And I'd, again, last year I was in San Francisco. I'd love to go to Portland. I love to do Portland. So if anyone's interested in putting on a show or they want me, they can contact me, again, AlComedian at Facebook.
Right on.
God, I sound like such a hack.
It's all
even
good, man.
I'm an anti-hack comedian.
There you go. Hey, yeah, I checked out. Well, I'm kind of getting ahead of myself, but I'll open up with this. I checked out your Just Another Comic. It's a two-part documentary that I saw
on YouTube.
Right,
yeah.
I saw it on YouTube. I didn't see it on Vimeo. But I saw it on YouTube. It was really good. Mainly, I think because it gives perspective into, well, what you do, but also, like, I think what it's like for a lot of comics out there.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of questions about that, but first off, like, right. what gave you the idea to shoot that? It was you and a friend that did that, or?
Well, the director is a individual called Jeremy Johnson. He's actually a student at the Academy for Creative Media here in Honolulu. Which is where I'm calling from, for those of you listening to Share the Candy who want to know. I'm calling from actually my apartment in Honolulu. And no 5-0 inside, must say that. But actually, I got a call one day from Jeremy Johnson. Now, Jeremy Johnson, as I mentioned, is a student at the Academy of Creative Media at the University of Hawaii at Manoa. That's essentially our film school there. And I had done a film with him last year called Mute. I started acting last year. So I've done about 8 films actually since I started acting last year.
Right.
And so I did a film called Mute, which actually played at a showcase here over the weekend. And Jeremy had called me up one day in April and let me know, Mute got into a film festival. And I was very happy for him and the whole cast and crew. And he had asked, did I want to do any project with him? I think he had a little time off. I think he was going to finish up the semester and go into summer school. And I said, yeah. And I said, well, how about a documentary? And I thought about doing a documentary about stand-up comedy in Hawaii, which I hadn't seen before.
Right.
You know how they say you always want to do a film that is kind of what you want to see?
Right, exactly.
You know, the most obvious idea for a film is what you want to see. I wanted to see a film about stand-up comedy in Hawaii. The initial premise and the idea I had was to be a Michael Moore-type narrator and interviewer for this film.
Right.
That changed primarily because of the idea that I got, which became Just Another Comic. And the idea was to do a documentary about a comedian who isn't a star, who isn't a multimillionaire, who didn't get fired from a sitcom, hint, hint.
Right.
Not trying to be subtle here. And who just was a regular working comic. And that regular working comic happens to be me.
Right.
So it's really what some people might find out about that is it's a documentary about me, but it's not really a documentary about me. I don't know if that blew your mind.
Right. No, that makes sense. That makes sense, yeah. What – have you gotten feedback since you've made that? Like, have other comics come up and say, hey, I want to do the same thing? Or, like, people that –
interesting. Well, actually, what – Just Another Comic, just to get – just so that people will know, Just Another Comic is has just been recently been released in a director's cut, which is a new cut, more than a week ago. It's on YouTube in 2 parts, which is what you saw, I believe.
Right.
Colby. And also on Vimeo, which is uncut, which is not in 2 parts. So you can see the whole thing. It's nearly about 30 minutes, about 28 minutes.
Right.
And so that people will know. This is not the first cut of the film. There were really 2 other cuts. The first was the initial cut, which was released in June of this year, and which was very different from this cut that's out right now. The second is a modified cut, which contains some material out and put some other material in, primarily performance material, because the director, Jeremy, was unsatisfied with some of the performance material that was shot.
Right.
We had very limited resources. In fact, we did this documentary with virtually no money.
Right.
So some of the shots weren't to his liking and his pleasing, and I could understand that. And so we had a modified cut, which was out, I think, in June or July. And so the cut that's out now is the director's cut, or what I like to call the final cut of the film. And that's it's very different. We have new voiceover narration at the very beginning, which is different from the voiceover narration at the very beginning of the first film, the first cut. We have some new interviews that we shot for this edition. We have unused interviews that we couldn't get to use in the first cut. And we have new performance footage, footage of me performing stand-up in this version. So it's, in many respects, it's almost like a new film.
Right.
In many respects.
So
it's very interesting.
Were the other versions, mm-hmm. those didn't have any of you doing stand-up?
They did, but they were very different cuts, different footage.
I see.
And also there was some added, because I did a gig at Hawaiian Brian's, which is one of the places you mentioned in the intro.
Right.
So some of that footage was put in. So I didn't have that gig when we shot the footage. We shot the film in April and I think May, I believe. I think April and May is when we shot the film, April and May of this year. So that wasn't – I didn't have that gig. So once I got that gig in June, we shot it and put it into this new cut.
Right. Do you have any other, like, plans to do, you know, I don't know if you want to say a follow-up documentary or, like, go a different direction? But
I would love to do a sequel.
Yeah?
I would love to do a sequel. It really depends on the feedback. The part of the reason why I'm doing, you know, promotion at this point, the film just came out, I think, more than a week ago.
Right.
And so I'm trying to get on as many shows as I can and promote as much as possible.
Right.
And you're one of those shows, obviously. But I'm trying to get the word out about the film. The problem with films on YouTube, what we're doing with this film is kind of interesting in that this is, and I want to stress this is a made-for-the-internet documentary.
Right.
You will not see this in any theater. You cannot go to your multiplex to see Just Another Comic. You have to see it online.
Right.
So you can see it on YouTube. You can see it on Vimeo.
Right.
There are plans to actually broadcast this on television in Hawaii. So we are my understanding is there are going to be some plans to broadcast this on the local cable access network or channels. Olelo,
right,
which is where I do a comedy talk show called Loco Laugh. I'm a regular on that. In fact, this Thursday I'm going to be taping the final episodes for this year. So.
Oh, cool.
That's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Something that, you know, kind of a tangent that came up in my mind. Can you just imagine a world where, and we kind of are, we're already living in it. It just hasn't, you know, taken over. But can you imagine a world where most of the movies that are successful are only online and not in theaters anymore?
Well, I think we're going to get to that point.
Right.
And what I'm doing, I don't want to say I'm a pioneer. There are other people who are making online content. But I didn't want to do a film and take it through the whole usual festival.
Right.
I should admit at this point, I used to be a film critic.
Oh, really?
I was an online film critic
okay.
for about 8 years. I wrote for a website called Ain't It Cool News.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, I've heard of that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. How could anyone not if you know anything about movies? But so I covered film festivals in Hawaii, and I've been to film festivals in other states. I've been to AFI in L.A., and I've been to Seattle International Film Festival. And so, though I haven't done Portland, I'd love to do Portland. If they want to screen at Portland, maybe we'll set something up. I don't know.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Well, Portland's one of those places that definitely wants to take on, you know, I would, you know, the word is beaten to death here. I don't know how what it's mm-hmm. like in Hawaii, but like
right.
an indie feel. So anything that's coming from basically zero budget, mm-hmm. that's just, you know, it's about someone who's, you know, as you said, someone that isn't necessarily famous yet, but someone who's working and coming up
right.
in the world. That's kind of what Portland kind of digs on, to be honest.
Well, I love that. Then
yeah.
I'm the right man for Portland.
There you go.
Hear that, Portland? I'm the right man. I hate to plug, but if there are other podcast. I hate to get your competition involved.
Oh, no, man. Do it.
But if there are any TV shows interested, or are there any podcasts in the Portland area or any other media outlets that are interested, I'd love to do interviews with them.
Sweet. Yeah, man.
Besides doing your show, which is going swimmingly at this point.
Yeah.
You're a good listener, and you're asking pretty good questions.
Well, right on. Yeah, man. I jot down basically what I do. You know, I write down a bunch of questions, just like I'll hear, well, he's a comedian, so I'll have, you know, five questions based off that. And then basically,
right,
based off what you say, you know, just jot down little tangents or little ideas. Now I know the answer to this, or at least, two answers to this, because I watched your documentary, so maybe a little, little spoiler in here, but I kind of wanted to talk about it with you. You mentioned influences in your Just Another Comic documentary.
Right.
Maybe did you want to talk about those?
Influences, yes. The influences that I have at present are my two comedy heroes are largely, although I have others, Bill Hicks and George Carlin.
Right.
And those are the two comics that are shaping me from beyond the grave.
Right. Yeah, now, yeah. Yeah. Isn't the world not as cool without George Carlin anymore, man? It's kind of weird.
I think so. I was in L.A. actually when he died.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it was funny. The best tribute, the best – I guess you can swear on these podcasts, right?
Oh, you can say whatever you want, man. You can say whatever you want.
Yeah, I'm just trying to get used to that because I did a radio show last – like last week here
right.
in Honolulu. So
right.
I was promoting the documentary as well. But I remember reading a article about George Carlin, and it was the perfect obituary for him, perfect one. The headline was "Fuck Hope." Fuck Hope. I said yes.
Right
this
on.
Is perfect. But George Carlin to me is one of the great American comedians. He had a great career.
He did.
And he was a very brave guy in terms of show business. What he did was what few to any comedians had done. That is, go from a semi-successful mainstream comic to doing this what we would term alternative comic style and finding an audience, and there was no guarantee that he would succeed
right
when he did in the 70s
right.
His career is amazing in that respect.
I'll go ahead.
So
sorry.
He's one of my heroes. I mean, I don't think he's one of those guys. I don't think I would be doing comedy if it wasn't for George Carlin.
Right. I don't want you to jump onto Hicks yet because I wanted to kind of talk about Carlin as well. Do you happen to remember your introduction to Carlin, like one of the first jokes you've ever heard or one of his specials
geez.
Maybe? Do you remember?
I mean, I have been watching Carlin up until the time he died. I've been watching him in
right.
terms of his specials
right.
for 20 years.
Or his comedy albums?
Yeah. Yeah, listening. One that I recall listening to was "What Am I Doing Here in New Jersey?"
Oh, okay. You know,
that's one. I like that. I like the one of the. I think the opening to that. I said, I haven't. You know, I love the opening. I'm just going to do it.
Right,
and
right
I don't
on.
Want comedians in Portland or others to think I'm ripping him off. This is George Carlin.
We're doing a tribute. We're doing like a 5-minute tribute to Carlin. So don't
right.
get pissed off. Right on. Go on, man.
Right, so I like the way he opens every call. I haven't seen these many people since they took a group picture of all the criminals and lawbreakers in the Ronald Reagan administration. 225 of them, I think I recall. I think that's the correct number.
Yeah.
225 of them.
That's awesome. I've probably heard Carlin jokes, but the first one that I remember that just – he started up his special. I forget the name of it, but it's the one he did right after 9/11 where he was in New York. And he comes out and everyone's just kind of doom and gloom, you know.
Yeah.
And he comes out and he goes, you know what no one talks about anymore? Pussy farts. And that's how he starts the show. And that
yeah.
was – And I'd
ahead,
probably
sorry.
I had probably heard a Carlin joke before that, but that's the
right.
one where I was like, oh, I saw – oh, you know what? I recognized him from Shining Time Station.
Right.
As like a child.
Oh, my God.
Right.
That's
so
right. He was the conductor. He was
yeah,
the conductor
exactly.
on Shining Time Station.
So he comes out and he says that. And, you know, I'm – let's see, 2001. So I was a freshman or a sophomore. I don't remember in high school. And he comes out and says that and obviously has my attention right away because it's hilarious.
Right.
And it's shocking. But also because it's like, yeah, it's that moment where you can just see someone just cut through an audience and, I mean, just take the room right then and there. Because right. everyone's just kind of doom and gloom. You kind of have to put yourself back in the moment and be like, right. remember what the world right. was like. And you're thinking, well, God, what is this? What can this guy say to kind of unite us, but also kind of make us forget and take over the room? Right. And he does, he does a pussy joke. And right. it's like, bam, it's like Carlin knew what the hell to do, like when he needed to do it. And that's what was great about yeah. him.
Well, you know, that was the great thing about Carlin is that he kind of looked at different kind of, you know, he straddled highbrow and lowbrow.
Right.
In his act.
Right, exactly.
Which I kind of loved.
Right.
But the thing about that show, I believe, it was originally supposed to be called I Kinda Like It When a Lot of People Die.
Right.
And they had to change it because of 9/11.
Right.
I wish they had kept it.
I forget what it's called. It's something like Complaints and Grievances, or it's one of those.
Something
it's,
like that.
Yeah.
Well, we're coming up actually on September 11th.
We are,
which
yes.
will be this Sunday.
Yes.
And you know what? I gotta be honest. I'm really getting sick and tired of all this coverage of 9/11.
I haven't been watching so much TV anymore, but when I did check in, I did see they're doing all these, you know, like it's a reunion or something, and it is crazy.
Yeah, they're having interviews with all the widows of 9/11.
Yeah, yeah.
What are they going to say? Here's the thing. I'm probably going to get in trouble for doing this bit. I'm just improvising this.
Right.
What do you do with these 9/11 widows and so forth? What are you going to say to them? So how is life? Is life so much better now that your husband is still dead?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. What's
yeah.
going on?
10 years makes all the difference. Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I'm moving on. I'm married to a wonderful man.
Yeah.
I mean, do I really want to hear that? I don't want to hear that. Enough with the 9/11 coverage.
Yeah, it's insane.
Yeah.
We'll do kind of a little fade into Hicks. Because I think that I like that I too like Carlin and Hicks. They're probably definitely within my top three comics.
Mm-hmm.
Top three. What I like about both of them is that not only are they great comedians and writers, but also they're good satirists as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Hicks was more so a satirist than maybe even a comedian. And I say that, I mean, anyone has a different opinion, that's fine. I only say that because when I watch his specials or listen to his albums, he, at some points it seemed like he didn't care if people laughed or not.
Neither do I.
Neither
do I.
He had like a,
but that's nothing to do with Bill Hicks. And that's why I have a lot of that's why a lot of comedians in Hawaii don't understand me.
Right.
I don't care.
Right.
And you could tell that in my documentary.
Right.
Because there were moments there when the thing that I find interesting is when jokes don't work with an audience.
Right.
And I love to play with that audience.
Right.
And kind of like tweak them and make them ashamed of the fact they didn't. Because that's a lot more fun to me than saying, you know, fuck off, you didn't get the joke.
Right.
Or, you know, screw you, you know, you're stupid because you – I'd rather make them feel ashamed and stupid than to tell them that they're stupid.
Right, exactly.
That's more fun for me. So I just love that. Like that's one of my favorite scenes in Just Another Comic is when I do my multiverse joke. I don't know if you remember that.
Something about it killed in another universe or something.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I believe in the multiverse theory and in another universe that Joe killed.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. I mean, I just love doing stuff like that.
Right.
But I really don't care whether an audience laughs at a joke or laughs at jokes or not.
Right.
Because it doesn't matter to me fundamentally.
Right.
And I guess Bill Hicks was the same way. You know, obviously we're very different people.
Right.
You know, I would never say that I'm as good a comedian as Bill Hicks. I think that's a waste of time even to think about it. We just have similar attitudes. That's how we're similar.
Right.
It's my attitude. It's not the content. My content's different. I'm more anti-corporate or more, more of an attacker on big business than Bill Hicks was, I think.
Yes.
Although he did a good amount of that.
Yeah.
I don't do the political and the religious content as much because I find all that boring. It just, you know, religion is another business, and, you know, that's what religions are. They're businesses. And then you have politics, and they're basically like contractors.
Right. Now, real quick, be careful what you say, because we're funded by the Mormon Church here. So,
oh, really? Yeah. Oh, yeah. My third wife, told me to be careful.
Right on.
My third wife, all those chicks on Big Love,
right.
Like the chicks on Big Love.
You said in your documentary that. Now I'll paraphrase. I won't get your quote exactly right, but something you go after corporate America, mainly because the America is like too, what did you say, commercialized or too?
It's over corporatized. That was my
right.
I guess I don't know if that's a correct. I mean, I studied English in college, so I don't know if I had the correct grammatically correct phrase there.
Right.
Syntactically correct, but
right.
Over corporatized. That's yeah.
But that makes sense. I mean,
go ahead, sorry.
The whole idea that, you know, anywhere on a main drag in pretty much any town in America, you know, looks the same with, you know, same signs up in the air, whether it's
right.
The fast food restaurants or, you know, Walmarts, big box stores, all that. I mean, it's really sad. I mean, when you think about it, there's not too many places where you could look at a picture, for example, and without a sign saying, you know, welcome to Honolulu or welcome to Portland. If you just shot a photo of a main drag, only the locals would know where that's at. But if you showed any regular person, they'd be like, I don't know. That looks like my town almost, you know, and that's really sad.
See, that's the thing about America. The stores, the buildings,
right.
The homes all look the same.
Right.
The people don't.
Right.
That's the difference. That's what makes America, America. The people are different. The people are different.
Right.
That's what you got to stress as a comic. At least I try to stress as a comic at times. So, especially when I do interviews like this, people are different, and that's what you got to do. Is you got to reach those people. We've become a society that's basically ruled by corporations. That's what we are.
Right.
As I mentioned in the documentary, you know, America is one nation ruled by banks. Non-refundable, with credit cards and checking accounts for all.
Right.
Everyone wants not to buy the brand, but to be the brand.
Right.
That makes no sense.
Exactly.
My name is Al, not Nike. Sorry.
Right.
And it's like I also say in the documentary, you know, I'm a comedian, not a corporation.
Right.
I'm a stand-up, not a startup. I'm not 501c3, but I do like 69.
I like that one too.
Yeah.
Have you seen the documentary, The Greatest? I think it's called The Greatest Movie Ever Sold.
No, I haven't. I've heard of it, though.
It's by Morgan Spurlock. It's worth a watch. But in
right.
one, and basically, he's basically trying to. It's doing a movie about advertising in movies, like product placement, and not only in movies but in the world. And
right.
In one part, they ask him, well, you, in order to do this, you need to find out – they're asking him or his agency or whatever is telling him, you need to discover what your brand is. Like, what's
right.
the Morgan Spurlock brand?
Right.
And, you know, I get that whole concept of everything you sell has to have a brand, but that's, like, really scary. And, you know, he goes on about this whole thing about, you know, brand. But that just shows you – I mean, corporations – you know, what I don't like is – they pose as they're formed as an individual, so in order that you can sue them. But that's kind of really scary because it isn't just one person. I mean, it's a bunch of different people that can.
Well, yeah, that's what happened. And this is, of course, you know, if we actually had schools that actually taught people anything worth a fuck, you know, people would know this stuff.
Right.
The fact is that corporations exist. Legally as persons.
As an individual.
Under the 14th
Amendment. Right, right.
Because courts ruled it that way.
Right.
The Congress didn't pass any laws mandating that corporations be persons, not that I know of.
Right.
So what we have is this legal monstrosity that corporations are considered persons, because that means that they will be able to perpetuate themselves ad infinitum, ad nauseum. You know, that's the problem that we have in this country with corporations, among one of the. And now we've gotten to the point where people are brainwashed into thinking they're a brand.
Right.
A brand of what?
Right. It's scary, man.
What are you a brand of? You know, if I look at people, what are you a brand of? Let's see. You're lying, so you're a brand of bullshit. Let's see. She's ugly, so she's, I don't know, a brand of ugly.
Right.
Let's see. She's kind of loose. She's kind of, what's her brand? Slutty? I mean, what's going on here?
Yeah.
It's a weird nation where you're being, instead of buying products, you're being told that you are a product.
Right.
I mean, hookers have known this for years, but most people don't know it.
Right.
I mean, it's great. You know, it's just nuts. You know, but that's the problem that you have in this country. Like I said, we're over-corporatized.
Right.
That's part of what Madison Avenue has done. It's part of, more importantly, what the marketing industry has done. Right? Because that's what marketers do.
Right.
You may have seen this in the documentary where I talk about, you know, marketing will not tell you what you need or even what you want, but what you think you want. You have to get the thought process in your mind. And then when you've convinced yourself that you need it, because you got to convince yourself, you watch that commercial, you've got to convince yourself, then you can go out. You've got to be able to brainwash yourself.
Right.
People think brainwashing is a one-way street. No, it's a two-way street. There's a person trying to brainwash you, and then you have to brainwash yourself.
Right.
You have to be able to be convinced. You have to almost argue with yourself and then win that argument in order to do whatever it is they want you to do. So if you see something, you know what marketing is salt on shit. That's what it is.
Right.
You could market that. New Nabisco, salt on shit. Hey, honey, they got some salty shit. We should go and buy some salty shit. I don't even like shit, but let's go out and get it.
Right.
See how they work? You know, you can market anything to people in this country. They'll buy it.
To tie marketing kind of back into like what I was saying about Hicks is he once asked I forget on what special it is, but he comes out and he says if you're into marketing you should kill yourself, and people start laughing, and he's like no, this isn't a joke, there's no punchline, don't worry, don't laugh, and people are still laughing. And this is what I really liked, is that this is what I meant. He didn't care if he got a laugh about stuff like that. He said,
right,
if you're in marketing, kill yourself.
Right.
And that was it. And that's kind of funny that kind of tied back.
Well, that's what he was talking. And notice in that bit, he's talking about – what's beautiful about that bit is he's talking about marketing. He knows that his marketing bit is going to be completely spun, turned over, repurposed, refashioned, really changed over by marketing people. That's how smart they are. He says, oh, I know, Bill. He's going for that anti-marketing dollar. That's a big dollar.
Right.
Oh, you idiots, I'm not.
Right.
Oh, yes, the righteous indignation dollar. That's how these people work.
Right.
See, what – there's no such – even in – there's marketing and then there's anti-marketing. And anti-marketing is marketing. It's just marketing without the usual bells and whistles.
Right.
It's anti-marketing to make sure the people who don't even like marketing are going to be influenced by those who are marketers, so they'll be able to buy their products. Thus, marketing works, whether it's anti-marketing or marketing. That's how fucked up it is in this country.
Right.
That's how screwed up it is, that anti-marketing and marketing go together. Anti-marketing is just another brand of marketing. There's no real anti-marketing except what? Anti-anti-marketing? Or that would be anti-marketing squared. How would that be? More like off-marketing,
right,
off-brand marketing. See, that's how the degradations work. That's how it works. And some people might be saying, well, how come is he telling dumb jokes? I don't want to tell dumb jokes.
Right.
I'm telling you guys the truth. And the truth is that you have been manipulated and screwed over by the advertising, the marketing, and the corporate entities in this country. They have this country by the gonads, by the balls.
Right.
They've got you there. They've even grabbed you by the pudenda, to be polite. They've got all of you. And they're not going to let you go until you buy or you get what they want you to get. And that's the difference. And you can really see it in comedy. Stand-up comedy isn't really comedy anymore. Comedians aren't comedians. They're businesses.
Right.
When a comic goes out and he tells jokes, he's not telling jokes. He's going out in front of a focus group. That focus group is normally called an audience. but it's a focus group. The jokes are a product. The comedian is a brand.
I can definitely see that.
You're seeing it all over again. Watch Comedy Central.
Yeah, exactly.
Watch comedians in various specials. That's what comedy has become.
Yeah.
You look at the different nights. The kings of comedy. The black kings of comedy. The Asian kings of comedy. Even had the comedians of comedy.
Right.
How the hell do you have the comedians of comedy? Patton Oswalt's a great comic, but you see what I mean?
Right.
It's affected that to such an extent that comedy isn't comedy anymore. Comedy
right.
is marketing and advertising. That's what it is. Let's not fool ourselves, folks. The successful comedians are talented. There's no doubt about it. When you see people like Lisa Lampanelli, you see Sarah Silverman, you see Patton Oswalt, you see these people, they're fucking talented. There's no question about that. But keep in mind, they're also being marketed.
Right, exactly.
I mean, there's fine to be marketed in a certain sense. I mean, fine to get yourself out there and fine to be promoting. I'm promoting right now.
Right.
The problem is, what are the forces that are promoting them? That's why the funniest comics are often people you've never heard of, and you will never see them on HBO. You will never see them on Comedy Central.
Right.
You will never see these people. I have a friend in Hawaii who is clearly one of the funniest comedians in Hawaii. Nobody knows who he is. Nobody. Why? Because he doesn't have the marketing and advertising arm behind him.
Right.
Because nobody knows who he is. That's the tragedy in this business. I'm sorry that I'm sounding a little angry now, but it's pissed me off for 7 years.
Oh,
it's pissed me off for 7 years.
This is good though, because it's not all. I mean, there's honesty in what you're saying.
Yeah,
it's not all.
I mean, I didn't expect to get this way.
No, it's all good. No. It's good. It's good because it's not all. You know. Oh yeah, life's great. Things are funny. I tell jokes. You know. No, I.
Right.
No, people like. I think people like this.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
The thing about what's happened to me recently is I'm on a cable access show. Now, that may mean nothing to people most parts of the country, but we don't have a comedy infrastructure in Hawaii.
Right.
We've got one comedy club here, and if you're performing, you're maybe doing jokes, you know, at shows here and shows there and shows in, you know, we don't have that kind of infrastructure that you would find certainly in L.A., certainly New York, maybe in Chicago, and in most places. Even when I was in San Francisco last year, the show I performed in at Castadola's, I was told, hey, you want to make money as a comic? Go to L.A. Can't do it in San Francisco.
Right.
And you got more comedy shows there than I can shake a stick at. I mean, just open mics, showcases, shows, that kind of thing. It's very tough. It's even harder to be a comedian now than it was even when I started in 04, even when people I knew got started back in the 80s and 70s, certainly. It's really tough. So now, you know, like I said, a friend of mine I was talking about, Kento, he told me, I remember years ago, he said, all you needed was a picture and a video years ago. Now you got to have your website. Now you got to have social media. You basically have to be your own publicist in a way, even though most of these big stars are publicists. Again, this isn't what I thought I was going to
say. Oh, no, it's all good.
Would you
say, so let's say that you didn't start, well, no, well, I'll just go that route. It might get weird,
right.
But let's say you started back in 04, and look at those, you know, what the times were, and let's say you didn't start, but you started right now. Those two different. If you can compare the two, basically,
okay.
Is it harder now to be a comic being out there, or was it harder back then to start out?
If you mean in Hawaii, it's harder now because when I started in 2004. The first 3.5 months I did stand-up, I did a minimum of 2 shows every week. Two, whether it's open mic or showcase, 2 shows every week.
Right.
So I did a minimum in that 3.5 month period of 30 shows. 30 shows.
Right.
You can't do that in Hawaii now. No way you can perform every week unless you've got MC gigs. And that's not really comedy. If you're emceeing weddings, that's not comedy.
Right.
But unless you got private parties every week, you're doing a private gig somewhere, you're not going to be doing comedy every week in Hawaii.
Right.
Ain't going to happen. Not in Honolulu. Forget about the neighbor islands.
That was actually one of my questions. Is and you've kind of touched on it. Stand up in Hawaii is it? Mm-hmm. It is. So you basically have answered that question. But it is much harder than say on the mainland.
of course, because if I'm in when I performed in San Francisco last August, I did only 3 gigs because I was partly there on vacation as well.
Right.
I turned down places because I couldn't get out there because I didn't have a car or whatever. I could have done far more gigs than I wound up doing.
Right.
But I only did 3 because, you know, I wanted to have some days of vacation and enjoy myself.
Right.
But in San Francisco, you could perform nearly every night. Nearly every night. You can't do that in Honolulu.
Right.
Can't do it. It's not going to happen. I'm supposed to do a show at Hawaiian Brian's here in Honolulu late part of this month. But basically, I'm going to stop performing for the rest of the year to just promote the film and to promote the television show that I'm involved with. Partly because last year when I started acting, I ended up doing a whole bunch of films. So I had to, like, you know, not – I couldn't book
right
comedy gigs. So I was busy. So I just decided, okay, I'll just leave the fall and just do that. To be honest, I also have comics who are trying to blacklist me and blackball me because they hate my guts. So, but I'm less worried about that. It's just I planned this anyway, and then you have that factor on top of it. But.
Right. I have a couple other questions, but one of them is about experience as a comic that you've had so far, and I know you're not done yet, so, you know, this is – maybe it's yeah. a working list, but maybe just like a best experience and a worst experience so far?
Ah, yes. Oh, geez. I'd say one of my best experiences was earlier this year. One of my best shows I had was at Pipeline Cafe, which is now closed, unfortunately. It closed in January. But I did a comedy show before it closed there. One of my best shows ever. Was there. And I destroyed a bunch of comics because they sucked.
Right.
You know? I just went to town on them. I guess I was kind of – I turned into a – morphed into a male Lisa Lampanelli there or something. But I went to town on them. I'd say one of my best gigs was my first gig.
Really?
The first night I did stand-up because I killed. And that's why I became a comic, because I killed the first night I did stand-up.
Right.
Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have done this. I never wanted to be a comedian.
What did you want to do? Well, you mentioned you're a writer, so you
yeah.
probably plan on just writing.
I was a writer and a journalist. So I was a writer and
Hello? Al, you there?
Hello.
Oh, here you go.
Sorry.
Oh, it's all good.
I was rescued.
Right on.
I was right in the middle of something, right? Or I was finishing up. Sorry.
Oh, that's fine. I don't want to bring the mood down, but have you had like a worst experience so far?
Let's see. I'd say the, you know,
or maybe something, or maybe just something, something.
Worst experience. Oh yeah, one of the worst. Oh yeah, more recently, I got booked to do a place called Ala Moana Beach Park. Have you been to Hawaii?
I have not. My mom was actually born in Honolulu, but I have yet to go.
Okay.
So,
I was at a place called Ala Moana Beach Park, and they had an event called the Dragon Boat Festival, and I was one of the scheduled entertainers. I was the only comedian. That should have told me something.
Right.
But I actually wasn't looking to do another gig, and I got booked to do this gig. They wanted me to do this gig. I'm like, okay. You know, big enough park, big venue. And I showed up there, and it's one of those sprawling kind of places with booths. And, you know, the event itself is a bunch of booths and stuff.
Right.
So I get there, and the audience is like a mile from the stage. I have no one really to talk to. There were booths on the side, but you couldn't really see them from where the stage was. Also, you had parents and kids, you know, parents watching kids play soccer not far from the stage.
Right.
So it was about as bad as you could get. I had no one really to talk to. So I just went up and told jokes in the air. So I'd say that's one of my worst experiences.
It would kind of the picture you kind of painted there too would almost be like a surreal moment, because it's like here, you know, a comic I would think is supposed to be able to unleash and say whatever they want. Yet, you know, you have families around you. And
yeah,
like,
I had to be clean anyway, but yeah. I looked at that, I said, uh-uh,
but
this
you...
ain't gonna... So, I mean, I it was a promotional gig for me, because I was promoting the documentary and I was promoting the TV show. And so I it wasn't like a major gig for me.
But
so,
and
that's part of the reason why I focus more so now on the doc and on Just Another Comic. And also on a dad. Sorry.
Oh, that's fine. It almost seems like the negative experience itself could become, you know, a bit in itself. Just because, I mean, it's like what were you supposed to do, you know, with a soccer game going on?
I was
going to
do semaphore comedy.
Right. Exactly.
I was going to do smoke signal comedy. I was going to do like a flare comedy.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know. There wasn't much I could do.
You mentioned earlier that you've acted in some films. I forget how many you said you've been in, but you.
I've been about eight. I've done about eight films.
And then is acting something new to you?
It's new. Well, I did theater years ago. I did theater when I was in my 20s. I'm about 41 now. Not ashamed to say that.
Right on.
'Cause I talk about it in my act, so I'm 41. I did it in my 20s, and I did it for about nearly 2 years, and I never thought I'd be doing acting again, and it just I got cast in this student film, which got shown at something called Ohina Short Film Showcase here called Mute. I play a football coach in it. It's about a deaf young man who decides to. He's treated very badly by his dad, and he loves football, so he decides to go out for a football team. So that's the. It was a film for ACM, which is. The Academy for Creative Media at University of Hawaii. So it was a student film. So, I got cast. That's a weird case because with Mute, I had actually auditioned for the role of the dad. And I was asked at the audition, could I audition for this part of the coach or read for it, really? Because according to the breakdown, they were going to give it to a real-life football coach. They wanted a real football coach to play the part.
Right.
It was weird. And then I get an email saying, congratulations, you got the part of the coach. I went, what? Wait a minute, I thought a real coach was going to play this.
Right.
So it was a weird way to get a part and weird aspect, but I enjoyed doing it.
Are any
I'm not really, acting has kind of been an accidental thing, and I found myself cast in a whole bunch of films, so I'm an accidental actor.
Are any of them available online at the moment?
That you know of? Let me see. I think there's a film called Eavesdroppings. I think that's on YouTube. It's directed by Corey Overheim, I think. I think that's on YouTube. That's a short film. It was at a short film competition called Showdown in Chinatown in Honolulu this year. And as for the others, I'm not quite sure because I've done like four student films and I've done like four indies, so
right
is four other indies. So I've done about eight films.
Right is acting something you think that you would pursue further more so than comedy, or is it kind of just up in the air right
now?
It's
easier to do than comedy,
right?
Simply because you go and you audition for something, they tell you whether you get it or not. Acting is 1,000 times easier than comedy. The thing about comedy is you don't really have any control over the environment,
right?
Not that you do with acting, but with acting, it's a very rigidly defined.
It's pretty much set up for you.
Yeah, it's pretty much set up, and you're treated better.
Right.
You're not really treated very well. The nice thing about doing this local laugh, the show Local Laugh, which is on Alolo here, that's the name of the cable access network. It's on Channel 52 on Alolo, Fridays at 8 and Saturdays at 10:30. The thing about doing Local Laugh that's been great is, you know, for the first time since I've been a comedian, I've really been respected as a comedian. You know, you get a chance to actually speak as a three-dimensional human being as a comedian.
Right.
I'm used to doing – I've done talk shows and I've done radio shows as a writer and a journalist before, so that's been easy. But as a comedian, it's been very difficult, in the sense that you, one of the things I learned from the start is people have nothing but contempt for you in many respects. They really don't respect you. So if you don't respect yourself, you're screwed.
Yeah.
You're really screwed as a comedian. I've always respected myself. And people take that for arrogance or for, or for ego. When really it's just I don't hate myself and I like myself and I respect myself and I don't want myself treated in a certain way and I'm not going to do certain things.
Right.
But a lot of comedians don't have that because they don't come from the background that I do as a writer and journalist. A lot of them are not really educated.
That's kind of the direction I wanted to go. Is writing, whether it be comedy or, you said you're a freelance journalist at the moment as well.
Right.
Well, I kind of wanted to gear this more specifically to comedy, but you could take it however. When you are writing, how often is it influenced? Meaning, is it creatively influenced, or are you one of those people that just force yourself to write every day?
Well, I write for a living, less so now than I used to, but I write for a living, so I'm a professional writer.
Right.
I don't write because I have a passion. I don't believe in that stuff.
Okay.
My view is, leave the passion in the bedroom. I have given a talk or two to groups, and I do have one lined up called the Business of Writing, which I can do to groups. But I haven't gotten any takers for that yet. But it hasn't been any influence on stand-up. The only similarity between being a writer or being a journalist, a freelance journalist, and being a stand-up is it's both solitary. It's both you do it yourself, and you get the glory or the blame or praise. Or praise or criticism yourself.
Right.
There's no one else. There's no other intermediary or little to no intermediaries in between that. So that's the attraction, I guess. I'm used to doing stuff myself. Whereas I think a lot of other comedians come from a background where they're bartenders or waiters, or I know one's a bus driver or unemployed. To be frank, a lot of comedians are losers. Because they come from backgrounds, maybe because the family life wasn't great, or they had no education. I went to college. I didn't go to the greatest college in the world. It wasn't the worst, but I didn't go to Harvard, but I went to college, got a degree. But a lot of people who get into show business don't have education. They don't have job security. They don't have other things in their life. They don't have much of a family life or much of a romantic life or love life, or much of anything. And it's more so for comedians. They have what they have.
Right.
What I've found in doing stand-up, the weird thing for me about being a comedian is I don't need to be a comedian. I don't derive any particular satisfaction in being a comedian. I don't have to do this because my life has no meaning. My life had plenty of meaning before I got into comedy. I didn't need to be a comedian to have a career because I already had a career. The difference, I think, with comedy is that comedy found me. I didn't find comedy.
Right.
And that I forged, I guess, I've reluctantly become a comedian. I've reluctantly admitted, oh, it's a career. So you have to go out and promote and you have to do what you have to do. Nowadays, I just find it a lot easier to do the show, like Loco Laugh. I find it easier to do the show because I can go and I can tape 3 episodes and it's going to get in the air. More people will watch me on that show than will ever come out and see me in some small little dinky show or some other show, even a major show. You can't argue with potentially thousands of people potentially watching you
right
on television. TV trumps everything.
Right.
That's what I've learned, even in doing this. And the nice thing about doing cable access is, I haven't been bothered by anybody.
Right.
Nobody's bothering me for an autograph or whatever. I don't get that.
With the world, I've talked to other guests, and with the world of, on demand and podcasts, and, that's a good example versus doing radio, where it's basically whenever you want it at your fingertips. That makes sense what you said. It just seems, you know, people, they, you know, they do whatever they have to do, and they'll get to you on their time. So if you're doing something that's like stand-up, for example, where it's live, you're going to miss a lot of the audience versus if you can do something where it's recorded and they can just come find you on their time. So
I just find it at this point it's easier for me to work on a TV show and I do the best I can on a show. And I go and I do local laugh and I'm treated with respect and I work with the people. They don't have egos.
Right.
I mean, I was recently attacked by a couple of other local comedians in Honolulu who have their own podcast. And, you know, they're calling me every name under the sun. And, you know, to me it's not just doing stand-up, but what are you doing with what I call the product?
Yeah.
Reluctantly, let's use a couple of business terms, product. If there's a brand, let's just say you are a brand. Well, when you go out and you perform as a comedian, you're actually promoting your brand by going out and doing shows. And just to reluctantly use that. And in regards to product, your product is whatever you're putting out there. If you're in a film, that's product. If you're on a TV show, that's product. If you've got a special, that's product. If you got a DVD, that's product. It's something that can be, you know, used and reused and seen and re-seen over and over and over again. You know, it's something that's mass-produced in a sense, but also can be used over and over again and seen over and over again. And so you got to get to a point as a comedian where you're putting out product. And these guys are putting out product. You know, they're going around slamming comedians like me and slamming other things. I like what George Lucas said in – what is that show? In the movie Heckler. He said, there are creators and there are destroyers.
Right.
I prefer to align myself with the creators.
Right. I like
that. And
that's
what I'm doing.
I like that quote as well.
Yeah. And that's what I'm doing. I'm aligning myself. I'm doing a TV show. I've got the documentary Just Another Comic, which is available on Vimeo and YouTube for your viewing, those of you who are listening to this, listening to Share the Candy. And you're putting out, I hate to use the term product, but product, or putting out something that people can watch and see. Anybody can go, you know, whereas these guys are promoting their little dorky open mics, and it's like, who the hell cares about open mics? It's not going to help anybody.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a matter of where do you go as a comedian, where do you go as a person? For me, it's a matter of, for me, it's about the future is – that's interesting. The future to me is about control. How do I control not just my act, but how do I control my the perceptions of me as a comic? How do I control what I do? The problem with being a comic is you have very little control.
Right.
You don't have control over what the audience is. You don't know who's going to be out there and what they're going to do. Are they going to try to disrupt your act? And you can destroy as many hecklers as possible, but that environment is still going to be there. The thing about being a comedian is the lack of control. I understand now why a lot of actors become directors. Control. When you're an actor, you have very little control, very little power. When you're a director, you have some power. And now when you have that power, you can put it to work. Hopefully it's positively, but some people do it negatively.
Right.
As a comedian, I think you want to get to a point where you get some power and you are able to have control. You want to control that act. You want to control yourself as a comedian. You want to control, more importantly, how you are seen and how people perceive you and how your act is perceived. And that's important. That's what it comes down to, I think, ultimately. So I'm at a point now where I'm more interested in control and being involved in creating stuff as opposed to just doing a show. That's easy to do. I can get up and do 15, 20 minutes or more. So what? That's any comic. Any hack can do that. I'm not a hack. So I enjoy doing the show, and I enjoy having the movie Just Another Comic out there. If people enjoy it, fine. If they don't, I've had comics come up to me and say that the film sucked, and they hated it, and they hate me. Well, yeah, fine. What are you putting out there?
Yeah.
That's what I say to all the critics and the haters and the doubters.
Right, exactly.
What are you doing?
Exactly.
What are you putting out there? If you're putting out your own documentary, your own show, hey, good for you. At least you're putting something out there. If you're not, go fuck yourself.
That, I wish that could, that should, if you made a poster for the documentary, that whole quote could be on there. That'd be awesome. Well, because really, I mean, you make something, whether it be stand-up, whether it be a movie, whatever, you're making yourself vulnerable. And, you know, people are going to have their opinions, sure. Not everything is good. Not everything, you know, well, right. Obviously is a bad. But, right. You know, some for the people that don't enjoy the documentary, there's going to be people that do enjoy it.
Right.
And for someone to there should almost be a thing where if you're going to be a critic, you have to make something first, and then you criticize somebody else. So the next person that comes up to you and says, you know what, I didn't like your documentary, you'd be like, wait a second, did you make a documentary? No.
Yeah.
Then you don't have the right to tell me that.
Right.
It should almost.
That's what I say to these comedians.
Yeah.
If you're criticizing the show that I'm on,
yeah.
Even if it's cable access, I understand. If you're criticizing the show and if you're criticizing my film, what are you doing?
Right.
Do you have any films out there? Do you have any shows?
Right.
If you don't, you can go screw yourself.
Right. I mean, you
I don't care what you. See, fundamentally with me, it comes down to this. I don't care what people think.
Right.
I don't care what the audience thinks. If I don't care what the audience thinks, why am I going to care what you hack comic thinks?
Right.
I don't care what you think. It really comes down to that. So when you say, am I, you know, showing your vulnerability, yeah, I'm vulnerable, but it's sort of like, oh, you know, somebody tries to shoot me. I'm like, oh, you missed.
Right.
I'm right here. Bullseye. You're going to shoot me in the head. Don't wing me in the arm.
Right, right.
You know?
Well, unless you got questions for me, man, I'm kind of tapped out.
Yeah, I can understand that. I guess I'm like a wrestler. I've got you down, submitted you, figure four headlock, got you down on the mat, and now we got now it's time for me to get my trophy and my belt.
Right on, man. obviously we'll close up. We'll, you know, tell people where they can check you out and if you have anything coming up that people can check you out on.
Well, of course, there's the documentary, Just Another Comic. It's on Vimeo and it's on YouTube. So please go to YouTube and Vimeo. You can search YouTube if you need, but you should be able to Google Just Another Comic Part 1, Part 2. On YouTube, it's two parts, and on Vimeo, it's straight through, cutting into one or two. Again, that's Just Another Comic, the documentary about me, Al, stand-up comedian Al, and it's on YouTube and it's on Vimeo. And you can also check out online, because you're not here in Hawaii, so you can't watch it on TV.
Right.
You can check me out as a regular guest on the TV talk show about stand-up comedy. A groundbreaking show in that regard in terms of Hawaii. The groundbreaking TV talk show about stand-up comedy, Loco Laugh. It is available on YouTube in episodes 1, 2, and 3. 2 and 3 are more recent. You also can see it on Vimeo. We have episodes 1 through 4. There's also a special program about the movie Mute, which is what I'm in. And you can check me out there. Again, that's Loco Laugh on Vimeo and YouTube. That's a talk show about comedy, which I'm a guest on. And don't forget Just Another Comic, also on Vimeo and YouTube. YouTube in two parts. And, of course, Just Another Comic should be on locally seen here on Alelo coming up. We should be broadcasting that. And besides that, we're finishing up on Local Laugh this week, shooting the last 2-3 episodes of that. So we should be finishing up the season. Hopefully we'll have another season in 2012. And you can check all those out. Again, Local Laugh on YouTube and Vimeo. And, of course, Just Another Comic, the documentary about a working comic who just happens to be me, on YouTube and Vimeo. And don't forget to listen to this, Share the Candy, archived. Obviously, it's archived.
Right.
But please come to the website, Share the Candy, and check out this show and other shows starring yours truly, Colby. Be sure to listen to Share the Candy. And if you want me to do, and if you want to check me out as a stand-up, please go to AlComedian at Facebook, AlComedian at MySpace, and I believe it's twitter.com/AlComedian. I hope I got that one.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, yeah.
And I need some more Twitter. It's relatively new, my AlComedian My Al Comedian Twitter page is relatively new, so if you want to follow me on Twitter, please do so. If you want to be a friend on my Al Comedian page on MySpace, especially, I could use a lot more, please do so. And if you want to be a friend on my Facebook, please do so. Again, that's Al Comedian at Facebook, Al Comedian at MySpace, and Twitter.com/Al Comedian. And I think, and don't forget, just one more thing, share the candy, please.
Right on, man.
Tune in to Share the Candy with your host, with the most, Colby, right here. I think it's what? ShareTheCandy.com?
That's right, man.
ShareTheCandy.com. Don't forget, tune in to ShareTheCandy.com. Check out this episode and more episodes of Share the Candy. So don't just keep it for yourself. Share the candy with everyone.
Exactly. Well, Al, it's been great having you as a guest, and thanks for making time for us, man.
It's been great to be here. It's great to do the show. It's nice to kind of do a podcast that's kind of nice and decent and not a bunch of craziness and nonsense.
Right.
Like some podcast.
Right on, man. Well, we'll see you guys next time.
But I wish you and I wish everyone out there in Portland very well. Love to come out there in Portland. Maybe one of these days.